Hi, I'm Patrick Henningsen, host of the Sunday Wire, and you are listening to the Alternate Current Radio Network.
Soldiers than you did.
Houston, we're standing by. Over. VTY minus 0.0. VTZ minus 0.1. Delta VC minus 5.0.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Sunday Wire. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. We're streaming out live on the Alternate Current Radio Network and also at 21stCenturyWire.com. Thank you for rejoining us. In this segment now, we're going to be paying tribute to Robert Perry at the bottom of the half hour. But there were a few interesting items and events that happened this week that we thought we'd mention. And one of them started with, we were, 21st Century Wire got sort of attacked on Twitter by another alternative media outlet. I normally wouldn't name the person who did it, but quite a few people already know this because they've been following it on Twitter. But Sybil Edmonds, who is the founder of NewsBud, kind of launched an unprovoked defamatory attack on 21st Century Wire, saying that we're inferring that we're not real journalists, that I'm not qualified as a geopolitical analyst, that we are not showing our funding, and accused us of having sugar daddies and tons of corporate sponsorship. I wish we did, Mike, actually. But and this was all done publicly, and she's a big figure. She's got thousands and thousands of followers on Twitter. So when she puts something out like that, a lot of people read it, and some people might believe it, some people might not. It did get kind of, I don't know, it was kind of personal, very derogatory, and it was totally unprovoked. What provoked it, actually, unknowingly, this is actually the interesting part of the conversation, is that I had retweeted a tweet by Glenn Greenwald, who is the editor of The Intercept. That's a website. Some people may or may not know it. Glenn Greenwald of Ed Snowden fame. And so anyway, I retweeted this tweet, and it was about the Palestinians in Israel. And I know Greenwald is definitely batting for the Palestinians on these issues, and so I retweeted that. I didn't put any commentary with it. And one of her followers made her aware of that, and then that's when she said, oh, 21st Century Wire is not what they appear to be, were the words that she actually used. Go ahead to her Twitter account and go look at these tweets if you want. They're all up there, unless they've been deleted, or I'm not sure. But anyway, I thought it was interesting because this brings us to a number of other issues. And, you know, when I started using Twitter, Mike, was back in 2009 or 10 or something like that. And I used to use Twitter, and a lot of people, this is common in America, a lot of people use it for a lot of different reasons. Some people use it as a bookmarking articles and things on the web. Other people used it for other reasons. And Twitter's changed and developed now. Now it's become quite political to actually retweet something. And so if you retweet something, you're apparently making an endorsement or a political statement that's supposed to be inferred by the act of retweeting something. And the press will go after people because they've retweeted this or retweeted David Duke. I've been accused of the same thing, even worse, by a really dubious character named Elliot Higgins from Bellingcat, who called me, I can't repeat it on the air, but as the classy individual that he is, who is a Atlantic Council NATO-funded person who produces basically propaganda for NATO. So anyway, we got attacked, and it was not pleasant. And I find it funny that someone's accusing us of being a big foundation funded or corporate funded media outlet. That's kind of funny in itself. I guess anybody could look on our website and see we have lots of banner ads. And most websites on the internet have banner ads. And that's how people fund their websites. We also have subscribers. We have members. We have donors. A number of readers, listeners who donate when they can for us. And I'll read out their names at the beginning of the next segment, actually. We have people who believe in us and publish our work, like New Dawn Magazine, who help to promote us and spread the word. We have a lot of great friends out there. And so this is how we're able to survive and keep going and doing the work that we do and the great investigative journalism that we do, the great work that helped fund the great work of people like Vanessa Bailey is an example, and myself is done through this way. And it's not a glamorous, lucrative business to be in. It's the opposite. If you want to be committed in this business, you're not going to be wealthy, and it's not going to be glamorous, and you'll be attacked by a lot of people. The Guardian will write hit pieces about you. And what's funny is a lot of the accusations made in the Guardian hit piece are very similar to what Miss Edmonds was kind of characterizing us as: not qualified, shady funding, or something under the control of some unseen entity or something. It's just kind of the same theme. So anyway, the name, how this all started, was a retweet, which I thought was interesting. So the nature of Twitter is something of its own. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things that go on Twitter. You have gang stalking. You have a lot of this sort of swarming. And a lot of it is just because a lot of people congregate around issues, congregate around publications, and so forth. But the idea that you can't, the implication is that the Intercept is a shady organization because it's funded by eBay founder Pierre Madire, okay, who's kind of like a George Soros type coming up through the ranks, kind of playing a similar role as that of George Soros in terms of the open society type foundation-funded change agent who's involved with the deep state, whose maybe involvement goes even further than that. Okay, the in terms of information, the Intercept has writers. They have many editors. There's a lot of different kind of content on this website. I have cited and linked to articles on this website before, because the information to me is good, relevant to my investigation or my report, so I would cite it. And people say, well, you can't do that because of its funding is suspect. I'm going to say, well, NBC International, BuzzFeed, I've cited these too. They're run by military-industrial complex corporate entities, okay, warmongering entities, basically. But they still contain fact, and this is my point. They still contain information which is either real or it's false at that time. The papers of record, the Washington Post, the New York Times, the BBC, even CNN. CNN produces fake news on a daily basis. But I still will link or cite CNN at certain times because of the information. I know what CNN is. I know what they do. But I also know that they produce a certain type of information. Some of it is used to validate events and timelines in history and facts, or agreed upon facts at that time. So I do the same with the New York Times. Academics will use the New York Times, the Washington Post, and cite them. And some of those same academics which we are in touch with will also point out that they produce fake news and absolute disinformation. I think to categorically dismiss a news source, a big news source, on the basis that their owner or organization might be a part of a conspiracy, which is certainly could be the case with every media organization, actually, on the planet, practically. But we still take information from them, is my point. We still cite them. We still reference them, no matter who they are. So it's It's an interesting conversation.
Well, I think for me, Patrick, when I saw this, it's a bit disappointing in many ways. I think there are so few good quality alternative media outlets out there that alternative media outlets shouldn't be attacking each other. It says something about the alternative media community as a whole, because you know, since when did a retweet become agreement from the person who's retweeted the item? You know, if you are retweeting a post from The Guardian or from The Times or from, you know, you're retweeting it because you might, because not because you agree with it necessarily, but because the people that are on your Twitter feed you feel might be interested in what in the piece of information that's being pushed out, right? So maybe it would be better to, instead of simply tweeting, but to quote the tweet and put some context on it. Maybe that's a good thing to do rather than simply retweeting. But apparently we're not allowed to retweet in order to attract somebody else's attention to something that somebody else has posted, because there's an assumption that you agree with what has been retweeted. That's something that is, I think, a part of the community that we are part of. Maybe we can't get away from that. But in a sense, it concerns me a bit, because if we look at what goes on with the mainstream media, we look at Channel 4 News, for example, and Cathy Newman and her recent interview with Jordan Peterson. Now, she has had somebody on her program that she fundamentally disagrees with, but she's allowed to do that. But it seems that in the alternative world, if we have somebody on our formats or our platforms that our audience disagrees with, then we get attacked for that, because we're presenting somebody who is who our audience disagrees with. That's a difficult thing. That we are treating mainstream media and alternative media different in that sense, because mm-hmm. alternative media only apparently is only allowed to promote stuff that we agree with.
Right.
That's dangerous.
Mm. Well, that's becoming like the mainstream in a sense, right?
Well, it's even worse than the mainstream in a sense, because it means that you know, if I want to have somebody on, if I want to interview somebody that my audience isn't going to agree with, I have to think twice about whether I want to do that or not.
Yeah,
and I should, that, you know, people are then I'm not getting the opportunity to challenge views that I don't agree with.
And that brings up a good point. We're going to hit that point. We're going to take a hard break real quick with HCR, and we're going to hold that thought, Mike, because we're going to pick up that thread on the other side. But, Mike, so just reiterate what the point you were making before the break again.
Well, the point I'm making is the mainstream media is allowed to have all comers on their – and it's accepted that mainstream media will have all comers on their programs, their platforms. People that we might like and people that we certainly wouldn't like, but that's accepted, and those people get interviewed, and some of those interviews are quite aggressive, as Cathy Newman showed, right?
With Jordan Peterson,
right?
Yeah.
But there seems to be on the alternative side, there seems to be a fear of having people that our audience won't agree with necessarily on our programs, because of exactly the reaction that you've had from Sybelle Edmonds.
Mm-hmm.
Almost a likelihood that if you have somebody who's not part of the club on your platform, that the assumption is that you agree with them,
mm-hmm.
and you'll be attacked for it.
Sure.
And I think we've got to get beyond that somewhat,
yeah.
because there are people out there that are presenting views that should be challenged. And we're not getting the opportunity to challenge those views.
Yeah, I mean, I've had people on the show, Mike, that we're totally on the same page on so many issues, and then they'll start talking about climate change, right?
Yeah.
And of course, I'm on a different page than them. I'm not on the mainstream page on climate change. I have a different view of this in terms of how it's perceived by the public and the role of science, or what they call science, in this thing called climate science. So, but that doesn't mean that I can't have a conversation with them, but I will get the condemnation of the from the congregation, shill, you know, like witch,
right,
sort of thing. And so I think that's what you're talking about.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah,
it's this sort of rounded condemnation. So I think what's interesting is alternative media, in some ways, has to be careful that it doesn't become too narrow-minded and also irrational. Because that decision that you're making there by condemning people for talking to this person or retweeting that person, that's a political, by definition, that is a political move of condemnation. So people are framing this in a political context. So you have a political atmosphere is formed in that sense. And so that's not based on fact. It's not based on rational critical thinking. It's based on emotion and politics, those two things. So that's what does govern a lot of people, not just in the alternative media, in the mainstream too, okay? But I think it's interesting because we always complain that, oh, the mainstream media won't have us on their platform, and, you know, that's not fair, and, you know, I just laugh, you know. I've been chased at least twice by BBC producers. No, and I knew exactly what was going to happen if I accepted.
Yeah.
So I just avoid them because I know that their intentions are not
honorable.
They're not honorable at all. So, but still, you know, why should we not have people from a slightly different opinion or part of the political spectrum or part of the mainstream spectrum? Why can we not have them on our programs?
We've just got to get past this assumption that anything that we present is automatically something that we are presenting as if we agree. That's not necessarily the case.
I mean, they might have a totally bogus perception of the war in Syria, which, let's face it, most people in the mainstream do. Okay, they might be in league with some of the worst propagandists going when it comes to the fake wars and undeclared wars of aggression and deep state subterfuge and so forth. But on other issues, they might not be. And so I can't categorically dismiss everybody all the time. It's just too much work, Mike. But I tend to look at things in a more detached way. I do look first at as information, as raw data, is how I look at it. And it's either useful for me or it's not useful for me. And in terms of what I'm trying to do, the case that I'm trying to build, the argument I'm trying to make, the research I'm doing, is a mosaic of little pieces of information that come together. And that's a lot of what we do. I know that's what you do as well. And you get your information from some very diverse places when you're putting together reports. And so I'm very critical of NGOs like Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International. But I also have to mix and meet and talk with these people when I travel. They're everywhere. And some of them are very good people. And many of them are maybe not necessarily involved with all the dirtier aspects of that business. But I can't condemn them just because they work for that organization. Because it doesn't mean they're a bad person. It means that maybe the organization is a bit corrupt in many places and being used by governments and deep state to produce propaganda. That's beyond a doubt. But to condemn people like this, I think it's, look, at the end of this...
Well, it's simply not productive, Patrick. At the end of the day, it's not productive. Nothing has been gained from this attack last week or from other attacks that you and Vanessa Bailey have experienced from other alternative media personalities.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, it's not productive. We should not be attacking each other. We've got 100,000 huge big targets out there that are all carrying out pretty reprehensible activities, and really seriously retweeting something from The Intercept is not the biggest crime on the planet, even if you were agreeing with what was being said in the tweet.
But this brings us to the last point, and I'll underline this, and this is my last word on this, Mike. So if you're truly independent, and you call yourself independent media, right? To be truly free is to be able to talk to whoever you want, whenever you want, and to hell with the consequences. Then you're totally free. You're totally independent, okay? And I mean anybody. How many people out there, Mike, can do that? How many? Who are they? Are there any? Name one.
Can't.
The closest one I can name, and a lot of people are going to chuckle or not, but the most, in terms of talking to anybody, regardless, with no filters, the most independent person in alternative media and all media has to be Jeff Rentz.
Okay.
Jeff Rentz, there's no barriers, there's no obstacles. He is basically open for everybody, basically. No matter the good, the bad, and the ugly. So if you want to talk about pure independent media, that's the only guy that can actually fits the definition from a pure definition, right? It's almost impossible to do, you know.
What about in the mainstream media? Is there anybody there?
Who's truly independent? Not really. In relation to U.S. media, you could say RT is very in international news, international geopolitics, Middle East, so forth. RT is pretty, compared to the U.S. media, is very independent looking. Okay. But in terms of mainstream media, there's not much.
Larry King?
Larry King, yes.
But he had to run to RT to continue to do
that's a good point. Yeah, he had to run to RT to keep his career going. Yeah. So it's even Larry King, and people can say what they want about Larry King, but if you look at the diversity of guests that Larry King has had over 40 years, it's pretty diverse.
Yeah.
He's had pretty much almost everybody. And so these days, maybe not so much, but it's a bigger field these days. You've got reality TV people. You've got tons of new entertainment people. You've got everyone's in politics these days, it seems. So, but it's not like it was in 1975. But the politics of exclusion, in other words, the peer pressure or the, let's call it the social desirability phenomenon within alternative media would keep you from posting something or talking to somebody because you're afraid of, you know, being swarmed on Twitter as a shill. Okay. That's the politics of exclusion. And if you're in that environment, you're not independent.
Yeah.
If you're free from that environment, you're independent. You know, so there's a lot of guys out there that I criticize, and they have crazy conspiratorial people on their shows and whatnot. But on one level, I criticize the content, but I don't criticize their independence.
Yeah.
And I think smart people need to look and decide for themselves if the content is real, true, or not. And that to me is better than censorship, right? But this crowd censoring through shame and pointing the finger and stuff like that, I mean, gosh, we're like in it's like a Eric Jarman film, you know, with Ken Russell.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like we're back in the days of the Roundheads and the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's scary. So anyway, that's all I'm going to say about that. But I think these are important things that should be talked about, and that's what I gleaned from this experience this week. It got me thinking about this.
Yeah.
You know, it did open the door to this issue. So I thought it was really interesting. So I thought I'd share that with everybody. But we're going to take another short break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to really get into the main theme of this show, and this is something very important. We're gonna pay tribute to the great Robert Perry in the next segment, and you don't want to miss this. This is going to be special, and a lot of people followed Robert's work, and I think you're going to get a lot out of the next hour. So we'll be right back. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. I'm here with Mike Robinson, editor of the UK Column. We are live on the Alternate Current Radio Network. We'll be right back after these messages.
Fool me once. Shame on you. If fool me, we can't get fooled again.